This podcast is sponsored by Pickatale, the reading app that fosters a reading for pleasure culture at school and at home. Aimed at Key Stage 1 and Key Stage 2, Pickatale offers schools, educators, and parents over 1,700 digital and audio books. The app is interactive, gamified, and engages kids with the content, and provides teachers with analytics to simplify the monitoring of children's reading progress, and helps to support language and learning skills. Learn more by visiting www.pickatale.co.uk/4-schools.
Hello and welcome to this TES podcast on tech and literacy. It's a fascinating topic and one that I'm happy to be discussing today with two guests. We've got Dr. Jennifer Milne, who is an associate tutor at the University of Glasgow School of Education, and Melissa Heppel, who is the primary principal at Atlantic Academy Portland. Welcome both. Okay, so Melissa, we'll start with you. When we think about a traditional kind of non-tech-led approach to literacy, what does that look like?
So I'll use an example from Atlantic Academy. So at Atlantic for us, in our primary phase, literacy is centred around a love of reading. It's something that we're really passionate about and we know is the best way to engage our students. This remains true both with the use of technology and without. We always encourage enjoyment of reading, and that feeds strongly into quality writing outcomes for students. We work a lot with real life authors. That's really important to us. And last year, Aspirations, our trust worked in partnership with Anderson Press, and which meant that we have whole class texts for all children to access, but also lots of author visits, so can put some real life experiences into that. We feel that those things are really support our children's learning, really engaged, and also develop cultural capital for our students, something that's a key priority of all schools, I think, at the moment.
Absolutely. And Jennifer, your thoughts?
Absolutely. I feel really strongly that reading for pleasure is the absolute key to long-term outcomes in terms of attainment. But at this time of COVID and the pandemic, what we're really looking through literacy is to develop resiliency in our young people. And a lot of that's to do with the empathy that they get through reading. So the traditional approach for us is also a whole school approach. It's really important. It's just not the responsibility of specific teachers or specific departments. It's about something that all members of staff, the teaching community, the wider community are part of. And I think it's about role modelling to young people, and it's a leadership approach really. And it's leading and role modelling on behaviours around literacy so that they can develop from that.
Yeah, so reading for pleasure, obviously, so hugely important. Yeah, and how are you finding that the take-up is with that, with your young people, Melissa?
Well, I think that our youngest children love books. They love being read to, they love enjoying the story, they love acting out stories. It's something that we model really well because it is so important. It's really important to expose children to different diversity, different cultures, and literacy and text and a love of reading is a key priority through that. It's something that we work hard to ensure continues throughout the rest of the school. And we do have to work harder. You know, we do have to fight children spending time on mobile phones. But actually, as we've said previously, if we discuss it, if we show children that we love reading and the reasons why you can experience different things and visit different places, that's really important. So it's something that we work hard to ensure that love of reading runs throughout the whole school.
Fantastic. I think that's a really interesting point you raised there about empathy, Jennifer. Like, how do you see that coming through in young people?
I feel really strongly that reading for pleasure is about emotional intelligence as much as academic intelligence. And we definitely do see that coming through in young people. At the moment, as well as working at the university, I do work in school and I'm doing a novel study with all the children that I teach. So every year from 12 years old to 17 year olds, and they are absolutely eating it up. They absolutely love it. I feel like there's much more of an appetite now, having come through the year that we've had. Books are like a solace to them, and I feel like they could identify and relate so much because of what they've been through recently as well. so important. Like, we look at other ways of interventions to increase resiliency, and we bring people inside to do things with the children. As we've got the resources there, because that's one of the clear outcomes that the research shows, that children who read and adults who read are more empathetic.
Yeah, fantastic. And so, coming on to the kind of tech element of increasing reading for pleasure and literacy in general, what are some of the early kind of approaches that you saw coming in around that, Melissa?
Well, I think technology's been part of our lives for years now, isn't it? We can look back to, you know, I can think back to when I was at school and using a BBC in the corner of the classroom and actually being exposed to it. And I think that from an oracy point of view, the collaborative approach that I probably experienced at school, having discussions was quite powerful, whether that's playing, I think, Granny's Garden on the BBC. And I think some of those things haven't changed and some of them have, but I think it's all about interweaving some of those successful studies within our curriculum, isn't it? We're not saying that any success is going to be going completely one way or the other. But I think that there's such a vast range of things out there and things have been trickling in for years. There's some things that we use, you know, your interactive whiteboard in your class every day. It's just a given these days. So I think that technology has been trickling in. And I think early technological developments, it's really hard to pinpoint just one thing, because those things have come in and some of the things are just an absolute norm in the classroom now.
And Jennifer?
Yeah, I do remember 20 years ago, we had things like Success Maker. And I think that it's important that these are tools and we look at what actually they're developing in young people. And we have to look at the theory behind it, like self-determination theory. What are these literacy interventions or such, or they're part of the tools that we use now. They're giving children often a choice. They're meeting children at the right level. Things that as teachers and practitioners, when we have a group of 30 young people, it is challenging to do all these things. So having these things that have gradually trickled through is making it easier. But again, it's about having the time to decide which ones are more valuable, which ones are working, who are they working for. As practitioners, you know, there's so much research out there, there's so much resources out there, but we need to have value given to this idea of interweaving and integratedness so that teachers can build up confidence in what they're using and how effective it is as well.
Yeah, I think that point about meeting the young people where they're at is really key when we're talking about tech. Seems like a great way to do that. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, I know a lot of the literacy interventions I've seen are ones that can adjust according to the reading level of the child, which is really important. So meeting them at the level where they're at means that they enjoy it, and it means that they progress as well, and that therefore increases their motivation, which is the key to all this. Fundamentally, the traditional approaches are trying to increase intrinsic motivation, but we know that both extrinsic and intrinsic work together. So being able to use sort of extrinsic motivation to get young people involved through the technology can increase their intrinsic motivation overall and develop them from what they're using in terms of tech to being able to therefore use real books and inverted commas as well as the tech books, use them together and give them more options as they're growing up and as they're going out into life and more skills therefore.
Great. And Melissa, your thoughts?
I completely agree. I think that the use of technology means that we can really tailor make a curriculum to children. Jennifer spoke about the interventions that are in place, and that's really key to being able to do a really personalised approach to the curriculum. But none of these things work alone. Yeah, you know, we can't just plug a child into a computer and expect it to teach them how to read or how to learn or how to communicate. All of these things need to supplement and support some great teaching. And when these digital platforms are used, your teacher is facilitating the learning. And that's what we need to remember. You know, it's not an alternative to, it's something that complements teaching practice that happens in a classroom.
Great. And so some of the, it sounds like, yes, you've seen a lot of different kinds of tech interventions here. The ones that you do find effective that do integrate well into that learning. What are the kinds of things that those are doing? Melissa, I'll start with you.
I think it's really hard to pinpoint just one or two great inventions. A lot of it is about how these things are used within the classroom. You know, our early years teams might use a digital device to help build sentence blocks to start with, and they do that collaboratively. That's from one end of the teaching. They might also engage the children by using virtual reality to have a dinosaur roaming in the classroom to stimulate their story writing and their role play. Just two real extremes of how things can be used really well. That's not an amazing invention. It's just the teachers using them to enhance their practice. We've spoken a bit about interventions. We use a lot of digital programs for catch up interventions. It really does help support gaps. None of that replaces reading books. None of that is instead of. It's all there to help children access the rest of the curriculum. And digital platforms and digital interventions can make a massive difference to what children can access and help them catch up, help them feel supported. And this is not just a COVID catch up. It's just how life works. And some children need additional and needs more. So anything that helps children build on their knowledge and skills is great. Anything that helps engage children into learning and their love of learning and wanting to find out more on those inquiring minds, that's also another fantastic invention. So I think the key part of the best tech is how the teachers use it. You know, you can get anything. There's anything available to any teachers if they want to find it. It's how they can then push that into the classroom to use.
I think that's so key. But it's also what you say there about, you know, there's, you can get anything. I think as a former teacher myself, like that's kind of quite an overwhelming idea. Like, oh God. So yeah, how do you sort of guide your staff?
I think it's also a massive pitfall as well with technology. You know, you could go to Tibet, the computer show, and you could be swayed into everything, think, wow, this is a great invention. This would be really good. But you have to think, okay, so what can I use in a range of platforms? What can I use really successfully? What can enhance things? And I think it's about having, you know, it comes down to leadership, having a real plan about your curriculum, a plan about your school. What are your priorities and what do you need to enhance it, to support it, to help teachers along the way, and not just be bought into gimmicks, because otherwise you'd have your school budget would be short on everything that exists, because everything can help children, everything can close gaps, everything can be your answer to all the questions. But actually, in practice, it's about whether the teachers can use it, whether the children can engage in it, and what the outcomes are. There are some great things out there and we use a lot of them, but there are some things that wouldn't be right for our school. And that's about knowing our children, our school, our community, and what works for us.
Jennifer, what are your thoughts on kind of the best approaches?
I think it should be important also to consider long term. Like, you know, a lot of teachers work on what works for them at a specific time and place. And Melissa's talking about the whole school, that should be important. And we also have to look at, you know, transitions. We know that there's a huge decrease in reading and in reading progress from primary to secondary school. And so long term, we're looking at the kind of tech that's developing across the curriculum so that young people can take what they're using with them, and that there's a crossover between what's being used in the primary and what's being used in the secondary. I know sometimes that can be quite different. As Melissa's talking about sentence structuring and technology like that, where we tend to use more in secondary school reading apps and just things to help them access reading more. But there's obviously still a lot of children that can benefit from having the gaps filled in. And sometimes that's forgotten about. And sometimes they remember what they had technology-wise and what programs they did in primary. And there's not a crossover there. So, you know, the best kind of technology takes into account a long-term process, and it takes into account the transitions. I think also we have to be thinking about the whole. And I think that's been a good thing that's come out of COVID, obviously. Young people, many of them have developed their digital skills because of the necessity to do so. And we want for them to be able to use what they're using in school at home as well, or for parents to understand what they're using in school and how that's benefiting them and what they can be doing to complement that at home as well. So I think it's like we're talking about a whole picture in terms of literacy, and we're talking about traditional approaches and technology working together, but we're talking about, you know, a whole curriculum approach. We're talking about a crossover to the home and the community as well. These would be the best kind of technology approaches that we could take. And again, it comes back to, you know, what Melissa's saying, there's so much out there and it is overwhelming. And quite often it's word of mouth. And teachers tend to go by what works in a practical level. So when they know people have experienced success with their young people, they're the technology or the ones that they go for as well. But I mean, I think that in terms of teachers and the profession, we've been asked to evidence more and more. And that's something that technology has a strength in, if we can see what progress is being used and the technology is doing that for us. And that can take something off the workload of the teacher at the same time. But we have to be looking at something that works according to what we're trying to measure as well, so that there's a crossover between what the companies are offering in terms of measurements and what kind of measurements that we need, you know, in the classroom and in the school. So there's a lot. Some of these technology interventions and apps and et cetera do one or two or three of these things. It's about finding the best one that fits for your particular situation at that time.
Absolutely. And just to go back to what you were saying there about joining up the kind of primary and the secondary literacy tech, I think that's a really interesting point. How much are you seeing that happening?
Very little, I do feel. I mean, personally, we have a crossover curriculum in Scotland, which is the Broad General Education Curriculum for Excellence. So there's a lot of opportunity to have a crossover. But in my personal experience, I haven't seen a lot of that. I think that it's more likely to be happening in terms of traditional methods. So I feel like a lot of teaching professionals might feel more comfortable about having a bridging unit in writing or reading in the practical level. But we're not really seeing a crossover at the moment in terms of technology from what I've experienced.
We're really lucky at Atlantic because even though I'm the head of the primary school here, we've got a secondary school on site. So we are an all three school. And having that and having an opportunity for our staff to work together, so our primary staff and our secondary specialists, it's been really valuable from a case of CPD as well as looking at how our children transition. I think they don't leave the building, they're in the same school, they know some of the teachers teach them through. And that's had a really vast impact. We have children join us from another school, and our children, from reading particularly, are much higher retaining. And I'm sure lots of that is due to the fact they haven't transitioned. Our programmes are seamless. We support one another. So when they leave me as a principal, they go to the secondary principal, but we have those conversations, that dialogue. Our curriculum is all through. We are really a whole school. And that's an amazing opportunity that we have to be able to implement that and make sure that we are more seamless than other schools. I know it is a struggle, but we're lucky here, we're privileged.
What could schools be doing to kind of make that join a little bit more seamless, do you think?
I think it's just the time and the pressure, though. That's the main thing that we have. You know, there's so many things that are competing, and I suppose it's about the value that's given to literacy and technology working together. I mean, quite often we have schools that are going down the digital line and they're not taking a holistic approach. So I think it's about valuing the holistic approach and then giving the professionals the time that they need to focus and develop this.
No, I completely agree. And I think it's also, you know, part of my lesson, I'm primary trained background, is valuing those other phases. You know, people can think that they're doing things the right way and that, you know, you have a dip when, typically have a dip when primary children leave secondary school. That's not through anything other than it's just a change. It doesn't mean the teachers aren't delivering great curriculum, great learning, using technology in the same way. It's just a change. And I think that respect from both phases, discussions, dialogue is really key. But as Jennifer said, time, you know, teachers they struggle. And we know that timing is really tough, and throwing another thing in makes things really challenging. So it's just about making sure we're working together where possible. and respecting each other and supporting one another and learning from each other. Ultimately, there's a whole, you know, as a primary specialist, there's a whole host of secondary teachers who have real specialisms in their area, and using them to discuss and talk to is really valuable.
Fantastic. And we touched a little bit there on the pandemic and how digital technologies just became such a lifeline. How did you see that around literacy and tech in your school, Melissa?
We're really lucky. We're very computer rich in our school. So we use a lot of Chromebooks. We use a G Suite. And being able to offer all children who needed it a Chromebook to work at home meant that we had about 98% engagement during the pandemic with online learning, which I'm really proud about. But that only happened because we had technology, because the children could still have a sense of belonging. They could dial into their tutor sessions. They could still have engagement. They could share a story together. They could make some animations of a story. They could use all those resources. We have high deprivation on the island where I oversee the school. And those children wouldn't have had those opportunities if we hadn't provided for a school. But it's you know, and it supported their learning and made them engaged. So there was a really strong plan. We're lucky to have gone through it. And I think what we can't afford to do is lose some of those things. It's a great learning experience, a great opportunity to go, look how much this can enhance our curriculum. Look what children can do if they have the chance to be self-directed using technology. Look what they can explore. Look what they can write, or look what they can create, or look at the books that they can review and discuss. And you know, they can reach out and talk to authors on Twitter. They can do lots of things, not just within the beams of their school. And I think that that's something that we have to drive forwards. Yeah, I'm incredibly passionate about. And we have to learn from things. You know, it's been a really tough few years, but let's take some positives away from it. And let's go, well, actually, look how this changed things, and look how we can engage those children, involve them in groups. And that's something we have to continue to drive forwards. Well, I'm passionate to drive forwards anyway.
And I'm hearing similar things from a lot of leaders. Are there any particular things that you're carrying forward? Like, I know a lot of schools got hold of digital libraries during the pandemic, and now they're keeping kids sort of logged into those so they can access them from home.
Yeah, we use digital libraries. We've used them for a while, and audiobooks for children who don't have parents who can read to them at home. All of those things are really strong things. Ultimately, children still love picking up books. They still love going to the library and choosing a book off the shelf. And I wouldn't want anything to replace that. I think, again, what we're looking at is things that can enhance that. So some of the powerful things are actually, if parents are supporting with early reading and phonics, there's videos that can help them not do it wrong and support that home learning. And that's really key. But I would never want to replace a love of actually physically holding a book and sharing it with somebody. That's really important. But enhancing that is key too.
Fantastic. And Jennifer, your thoughts?
We're a digital school, but we have a really wide range of deprivation in our school also. The research that I did over the pandemic was examining the impact of COVID-19 on adolescents' reading habits. And what we found in that research was about a quarter of our young people increased their reading over the pandemic, whereas similarly a quarter decreased. And then we had a group in the middle that didn't increase or decrease their level of reading. And I think it's really important to look at both sides. Melissa said that she had 98% engagement, which is absolutely amazing. But for us, those 25% who were not engaging in learning and are decreasing their reading, and that's something that we need to really focus on coming out of the pandemic. But we also need to look at those who were engaging, as Melissa says. And if you've got 25% that were at home during the pandemic and were actually reading more than they did in a normal school term, that's equally important. The barriers to reading are obviously access and support and environmental over the pandemic. And for a lot of our young people, they didn't have digital access. And that's something that we really have to take into consideration in this conversation. And it's fine that we are a digital school, and it's fine that, you know, that we're in a digital age, but for a huge proportion of young people, no matter what we do, they don't have the access, and they certainly don't have the support and the environment at home for that. And we can give them Chromebooks and laptops, but they're still not necessarily going to access them at home. So that's something that's really important. Another interesting part of that research came back to say that 2/3 of those young people prefer reading a real book and 1/3 prefer online books. And I thought that was quite interesting and significant. And that's something that we should take forward. 1/3 that prefer a digital book is a high proportion. So we are working to provide that for them. But if there's still 2/3 of young people who would prefer to hold the book in their hands and read that, we can't forget that as well. So when we're using digital approaches, we're having to go back to the whole idea of interweaving and working these together. Those people that prefer a real book can still get advantages from digital approaches and vice versa.
Fantastic. And you mentioned there the importance of ensuring that they've got the support to actually use those resources. What does that look like?
What the research showed was, you know, those that live in a relatively comfortable environment who have quiet at home are able to learn, whether it be traditionally or digitally. Those children that live in a home where it's noisy or crowded, they don't have the space. And actually these children preferred or felt that they could read more in school. So I suppose it's about, you know, what we can control, and that is making spaces in the school for them, so that they are able to access it there, because we can't, whatever we do as teachers and educationalists, and we try to work with the home, we can't change that. So what we can do is support them in school, develop the skills in school, give them the space in school, and then hopefully, you know, long term, as they grow independently, they will be able to develop and use that themselves.
Fantastic. Anything to add on that, Melissa?
No, I think it's, you know, what you're saying is really interesting. It's so fascinating, and it made me actually just reflect on my answer, go, wow, a third of yours prefer to read online, and maybe, you know, I'm very passionate about saying, no, they need to hold a book, and that's really important, but I need to reflect on that and do some questioning, because, you know, we need to remember that our young learners, we've got to make sure we're accommodating them, and the things that we think may be lovely and great and important, we need to make sure that's working for some more. So some really interesting thoughts for me to reflect on and think about there.
Okay, and finally, for any teachers or school leaders who might not be using a huge amount of tech at the moment and would like to introduce more of that around literacy in their classrooms, what advice would you have for them, Melissa?
I think be confident, which is really easy to say, but we know how wrong technology can go. And there's nothing worse than standing in front of a class of 30 children relying on something and nothing works. So be confident, have a go. Don't be scared to ask the children to help support, because they know way more than you do. And they're always happy to come and show it. But actually let them, because some of our young children are a massive wealth of knowledge. But I think also from a leadership point of view, invest in staff to upskill them. We've recently had an insert day where we went and had a play in our creator space. So we played with the VR headsets, we played with the programmable robots, we played with the 3D printers. Because sometimes you don't know how you could weave things into a literacy curriculum that you wouldn't necessarily automatically think of. So having a chance to just go there, talk to people, experience it. As a leader, I feel that it's really important that I give myself time to do that, because they're already busy. And if you've got a lesson that's ready, you're not going to then think, oh, how can I use technology to enhance this? It can enhance it, but it's another job to do. So it's really important to me to give my staff time to be able to explore, to discuss, and see what could work for them. But I'm very passionate about technology, so they know that about my school. That's going to come through for me, and that's part of my vision. I think that that needs to be a top-down vision from the school to make sure it's really embedded, and to make sure that staff have the opportunity to do those things and create opportunities for them, like virtual author visits or virtual trips or anything that will support them, but make sure that you're fully behind them and engaged in it, and don't be scared of things going wrong, because there's always a solution.
That's such great advice. And Jennifer, any tips from you?
Well, I agree totally with what Melissa's saying. The idea, don't be frightened, don't be scared. Sometimes you do feel like the young people know more than you, but have a growth mindset, be curious, be open, ask questions, ultimately work together. You know, we've talked about working with the primaries and secondaries together and find out what's actually happening and what's been successful out there and try to collaborate with others. You know, join in a small group or set up a small group around your interests. And that was what would be most successful.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And thank you both for joining me. That was really useful.
This podcast is sponsored by Picatel, the reading app that fosters a reading for pleasure culture at school and at home. Aimed at Key Stage 1, Picatel offers schools, educators and parents over 1,700 digital and audio books. The app is interactive, gamified and engages kids with the content, and provides teachers with analytics to simplify the monitoring of children's reading progress, and helps to support language and learning skills. Learn more by visiting www.picatel.co.uk/4-schools.